And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you. One.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where after one lull of a day on Tuesday, NBA free agency is back at it again with the white vans and the green money, proving it has absolutely no chill. Tommy, last time I talked to you, we were talking about the green explosion that was about to come, and throwing out names like Chandler Parsons, Hassan Whiteside for the Lakers. Well, that pretty much feels like 6 months ago.
Yeah.
And the NBA landscape has completely flipped on its head. So how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I mean, this has been like the craziest free agency just overall. I mean, I expected it to be a little bit crazy, but this has just like surpassed my wildest expectations.
Yeah, no hyperbole, pretty much.
Yeah, it has been very entertaining. I feel like every day, it's like just when you think everything's over, something even more ridiculous happens. So,
definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Before we get into all that, I'd like to point you guys once again to our Twitter. Please follow us at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us on iTunes, because the more you rate and review us, that's how many rights to unpronounceable second round picks like Modingus Skittish Vesely the Lakers will continue to send out to other teams for real assets. So with that being said, let's get back into the NBA free agency and the wild ride we've had the last week. Before we get into the Lakers-specific stuff, I wanted to touch upon two big deals that happened. And, you know, to preface everything, this is kind of what happens when the Players Association didn't agree on doing the smooth capping and allowing the cap to gradually jump starting last year. Instead, you get this cap free fall where the cap space all comes in 1 year, allowing unique, like, unicorn moments that alter history entirely, like the Golden State Kevin Durant thing to happen, where an NBA champion or, you know, NBA finals contender and a previous NBA champion is able to sign another top 2-3 player
outright pretty much.
So do you know which two big players I'm talking about? Because it's not Courtney Lee and Boris Diaw. So let's start right there. What are your quick thoughts? And let's keep this brief. Your quick thoughts on first Kevin Durant to the Warriors? Because for me, I still haven't really felt like it's been a real thing. It's been pretty surreal. It happened on 4th of July and it happened. And I was kind of just like, oh, yeah. I mean, I guess that happened. That's an amazing team. And then you see him fitting his Golden State Warriors jersey today, and it's sort of starting to become real. But I don't think until I see it happen on the court will I still believe it, really. So what are your thoughts on the Kevin Durant Golden State signing?
Yeah, pretty much the same as you. It is pretty ridiculous. I mean, this team is going to create now like a 4 to 5 year dynasty here, because all these guys are in their mid-ish 20s and they're all like outside shooters and like kind of finesse players, so it's not like they are 100% dependent on athleticism to win. So it's just so ridiculous. I mean, I think Durant, there was this weird media backlash, right? Well, at first it was like the media sort of didn't like it, some people, and then some people got like overly defensive, and then the people who didn't like it said, well, where was this when everybody was bashing LeBron? And I guess my only comment on that is this is different than what LeBron did, because it's pretty similar, but in my opinion, the main difference is Kevin Durant hasn't been walking around for the last 9 years calling himself God. You know what I mean? He hasn't been walking around with tattoos saying chosen one and I'm the best player of all time. And, you know, maybe LeBron was a little bit a victim of the media hype that surrounded him, but with LeBron, it always felt like this guy, you know, is the self-proclaimed chosen one. He called himself King James. It seemed like every year had an excuse in the playoffs, would fade in the playoffs, and all, you know, constant excuses. Everybody remembers, like, Elbow Gate that one year. You know, that was, like, LeBron's persona. And Kevin Durant has played with another superstar his whole career. He's played in a small market, just like LeBron did. And it just wasn't enough. He wasn't going to win there, and he wanted a change of scenery, and he bought what the Warriors were selling. And I'm not going to say this has ruined the NBA, but God help anyone who's trying to compete with that team for the next 5 years, because not only do they have Kevin Durant, Klay, and Curry and Draymond locked up for, like, well, Curry's going to be a free agent, and Durant, but obviously they're going to re-sign both for max contracts next summer, but so they're going to have all four of those guys locked up for, like, the next 5 years at least, and they are going to get so many minimum contract ring chaser types, you know? So it's the rest of the NBA is pretty much screwed unless one of those guys gets hurt.
I mean, that's already been put into effect with David West signing for nothing. Exactly. Zaza Pachulia signing for nothing.
Way,
I mean,
below it's market for Zaza.
Yeah. I mean, and the fact that they were able to keep all the guys they wanted to keep in terms of Sean Livingston, Andre Iguodala, it's crazy. And, you know, if you had to concoct a player that would fit into Golden State system perfectly, a superstar player, you would pretty much create Kevin Durant.
Exactly.
And then some. So it's like crazy that you can just plug him in there and he does he literally does the thing that they needed the most this past playoffs, which is in the playoffs, they struggled because Steph Curry couldn't break his man down because of whatever limitations or injuries were limiting him.
Right.
And Klay Thompson's not a one-on-one type guy. Draymond's not a one-on-one type guy.
Right.
When the offense bogs down, you need a guy like KD who can cross his man over and break him down a little and hit that mid-range jump shot, you know? And that's exactly what KD can do, you know. But it's like they both perfectly mesh with each other in terms of what KD wants is a system, a team with passing and motion. He's been in this system with Westbrook where Westbrook's taking on triple teams while he's wide open with his hands up in the air and Westbrook's ignoring him, you know. He sees Steve Kerr in his system and he's like, oh my God, it must be so much fun to be part of that. And then meanwhile, Golden State's struggling in the finals with the Cavs and it's like, oh my God, it would be great if we had another guy who could just break his man off one-on-one. And
Now they
both fill each other's needs, essentially.
They do. And look, Golden State lost the finals because they didn't have a guy who could make a shot in the last... They didn't score a basket in the last, what, 4.5 minutes? They didn't make a field goal in the last 4.5 minutes of Game 7 of the NBA Finals. And the reason is, you just hit on it, they don't have a guy who could go one-on-one. Durant perfectly fills that role. He makes threes. He's just such a good player. Oh my God, it's just it's ridiculous. But yeah, hey, so props.
Indeed. We were joking, once we saw that Jerry West tweet about how he called up Kevin Durant, we were like, oh, he closed it again. That's exactly what happened. So Golden State Warriors, we're gonna have to hear it from annoying NorCal fans, annoying bandwagon fans. If you thought it wasn't bandwagony enough, here it comes. But anyways, it'll be fun to watch anyways, so. All right, so let's move on to the other big signing that happened just literally yesterday. And, you know, we were joking about this one, too, saying, Wade does this every year, always saying that he's not going to the Heat and that he's disrespected. And all of a sudden, he's no longer back with the Heat because he is with the Chicago Bulls now on a 2-year, $47 million deal, only $7 million off of what Miami initially offered him, although they did initially offer him only $10 million a year, it's crazy. So what are your thoughts on the Dwayne Wade Miami drama, pretty much? And I think this says more about Miami as an organization, Pat Riley, because that dude has no chill.
He does not know. Dwayne Wade, props to him. Dwayne Wade took a stand for all players, like, with this move, right? Like, he might not fully know it yet. But I'm so, like, there was, like, the Lakers did Kobe a big service. And I think everybody recognized, like, look, this was, he got a legacy contract to close his career. Like, I know you're not playing right now. You're, like, coming back from your Achilles. You're not even close to the same player you once were. we're not even going to do this song and dance of letting you go into free agency. We're just going to re-sign you now and give you the contract and still make you one of the highest paid players in the league, give you that final contract and let you retire with some dignity. You know what I mean? And and we want this to be in the record books and legacy that you were here for 20 years. Okay, so the problem is there are so many guys who have started this trend of like, oh, well, you know, I've been with franchise X my whole career and they're trying to build a contender, so I'm going to take less. Tim Duncan did it. Dirk Nowitzki did it. Kevin Garnett came back to the Timberwolves. And I mean, even with the Celtics at the end, he sort of took a discount. Yeah. Props to Dwayne Wade for being like, wait a minute. The owners are already kind of screwing us with the CBA. You know what I mean? I'm not going to continue this trend of like, I'm next year, if I come back to the Miami Heat, I'm going to be the best player on my team. And you're going to seriously, with a straight face, come out and offer me 2 years, $20 million or whatever they offered, because you think that I'm going to take that because of legacy and I don't want to look bad in PR and blah, 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 this and that. It's like the owners are strong arming the players because they don't want them. They know that the players don't want to seem greedy. You know, they don't want their public perception to be like, oh, well, you know, Wade is 33, but like, yeah, I guess he's greedy because he's not the same player he was. Dwayne Wade was the best player on Miami last year, and he would have been the best player on Miami next year had he come back. So props to Wade, props to the Bulls for, you know, I would never expect the Bulls to make a move like this, but
yeah,
they did it and they went for it. And now they have Wade and they're going to have a max slot next summer with their expiring contracts like Gibson and et cetera coming off the books. So, and the minor cap jump, and look, they can create space if they need it. Right. So another thing, Rondo's second year is only $3 million guaranteed out of like the $14 million or whatever that this deal has. So going to be able to create space easily if they need to sign a second max. And now you have freaking Dwayne Wade there who's going to vouch for you in free agency meetings. And, you know, when you already have Dwayne Wade, you already have Jimmy Butler. I can't imagine it would be that hard to find a third star. And there's going to be many stars next summer who are going to be looking for a change of scenery who would consider the Chicago Bulls now. So I really like that move.
Yeah, I mean, even just their starting lineup, let's just say Rondo is a neutral player. You have Wade, Butler, Mirotić, and then Robin Lopez, who's a very solid center.
Really solid.
That's a solid starting five, you know, and the fact that we thought that the Bulls were pretty much teetering on the edge of rebuilding mode, the fact that they were able to turn it around really quick and not only get a guy like Wade, but a guy like Wade who's, you know, his home, I don't know if his hometown's in Chicago, but it's in that area and he's always wanted to be a Bull. It's almost like a franchise legacy kind of signing as well, you know, so it just fits perfectly for everybody. And also Jimmy Butler is like an older young guy, you know,
exactly.
He's like 27. Yeah, yeah. So it fits his timeline as well. So they don't need to trade him out of desperation at this point. But, you know, the last thing on the Heat thing was that this, I feel like this just ruins their reputation because on the Lakers end, I feel like Kobe's last game made that $48 million or whatever worth it. You know, it's like we pay $48 million for that last send out. That's nuts that the whole world is able to see. And you'd hope that you'd be able to do that for Wade. Instead, you don't even get to see a last game from him because you lowballed him to like a laughable level, you know, and
this is
going to affect them in the future for negotiations in free agency next summer, you know?
Yeah.
And the craziest part is Wade already did the pay cut stuff for them.
Exactly.
He took a pay cut when the big three came. He took a pay cut the next year. He's never been the actual highest paid player on his team, which is ridiculous because when he was a rookie, Shaq was there, you know?
Exactly.
So it's just crazy that you never give him that opportunity, even if it's just for 2 years. Why couldn't they have just done that for 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
So at that point, I think he was just disrespected and he was like, I don't care if it's $7 million difference. I'm not doing this again, you know?
Yep.
So
yeah. And good for him. And good. And again, besides Miami, this had, I think, really strong implications around the entire NBA because we're seeing this like LeBron created trend now where these guys are doing like these 1+1 deals. I mean, I think that's probably going to end in the near future anyway, because the CBA is going to like level off. But in terms of the cap jumps, I should say, not the CBA, the cap, but yeah, I don't know. Like, we were going down this dangerous path again, where guys were being put in situations where they were forced to look at ownership, and ownership would look at them and be like, hey, you know, we want to sign so-and-so, and we want you, you know, you've been here for 12 years, 13 years, and, you know, we want you to retire here, but if we're going to field a competitive team, we're not going to be able to pay you that much. And, like, putting so much pressure on these players, and now it's sort of showing the owners that, like, you can't do this. You know, the players almost thought they had too much power. You know, like, Wade was like, whatever, LeBron's doing this. Other guys are doing this. I'm going to do these 1+1 deals too. Miami has to pay me. I'm the best player. It turns out they don't have to pay him. And now, like, players are going to start to perceive stuff like that too, right? It's not just like, oh, the franchise is going to look bad. It's like players are going to start to think like, okay, well, Miami did it. How do I know that Team X isn't going to do it? How do I know? And guess what? The one team that has proven that they do take care of their stars, the Lakers. So that should help them down the line.
For sure. And we'll see if we're going to enter into a lockout zone next year because of how wacky this summer was. So, well, that said, we'll wrap this segment up and go head straight into the Lakers' big move. So we'll get to that in just a second.
Who do you think going to win out of the Cavs and the Warriors?
The Cavs and the Warriors?
Yeah.
What is the Cavs and the Warriors? Is that a golf team? I wish I knew what you were talking about, man.
All right, so the Lakers saw the Bulls deal for Wade, and they said, you raise us one Wade, and we'll raise you one Jose Calderon, baby. Oh, yeah. So the Lakers last night were the facilitating team, along with the Cavaliers, who took on Mike Dunleavy. The Lakers took on Jose Calderon for 2 second-rounders,
nice.
While LA gave up the rights to some random foreign player we drafted 8 years ago. His name is Chikadelo Matabak. No, I'm just kidding. just kidding. It's actually our favorite, Adar Majok, who, when he first came out, people were comparing him to, like, Amari and Odom or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he was always been just our favorite fictional NBA player, and now he's actually part of a deal.
Like 4 times already.
I mean, we probably have in the last 8 years. So let's talk about Jose Calderon, 40% career three-point shooter, guy with a great assist-to-turnover ratio his entire career, always averaged around 5 to 8 assists with, like, less than 2 turnovers. Last year, he was a Laker for us in one game in Staples Center when he hit that three-pointer.
I was at that game, actually.
You were at that game? Yeah. You were already hoping he was a Laker, and you got your wish. So Calderon, what is your thoughts on Jose Calderon? Some people might be freaking out. Why are we getting another washed up guy? But once again, he's an expiring $7.7 million. This is clearly just another veteran mentorship play for D'Angelo. Yep. What any other thoughts on Calderon signing?
I actually
trading.
This is going to sound extreme, but I love this trade.
I love
the trade. I mean, look, we needed. I don't know. Okay, look, I don't know if we needed another guard. A lot of people said we did. I mean, we ended up signing Huerta. Well, I guess we'll get to that. But we ended up signing Huerta, spoiler alert. But I don't know. I don't know if we needed another point guard, given that D'Angelo and Clarkson are going to take, like, minutes at that position. That being said, though, and also Lou could play some there. It does not hurt at all to sign a point guard with, you know, to have a little extra insurance. We had money to spend. Calderon is 34 years old. He's been in the league a long time. He's a very solid veteran player. He's 34, but this isn't like a Steve Nash back injury acquisition. Like, this guy played in 72 games last year. He only didn't play in like 10 games. I mean, I don't know if he missed any because of injury. I'm pretty sure most of those 10 that he missed were because they shut everyone down for the last 10 games. He shot 41% from three over his career, but he also shot that percentage just last year. Like, this guy is washed. I mean, you don't want him to play more than like 10 minutes, but he's not like a completely washed up injured guy or something. Like, if his role on our team is going to be, let's see if he can play 10 minutes or 5 minutes or 8 minutes or whatever, like spot minutes here and there, not even play all 82 games. I really like that signing because guess what? In this market, if you were trying to get an expiring contract point guard, you would probably have to pay more than $7.7 million for any like decent serviceable guy. And at least when you get Calderon, you know you're getting a high character good veteran leader type guy who's not going to get in D'Angelo's way. He's not going to have an ego. He's not going to be a jerk in the locker room. I mean, one guy I really wanted was Norris Cole, just because I thought it would give us a defender. But even there, it's like, okay, are we sure we could get Norris for a multi-year, on a one-year deal? No, I would assume he would want a multi-year deal. And then if you were trying to get him on a one-year deal, you might have to pay that full, like, $16 million, you know what I mean, to play for you for 1 year. So you get Calderon, who, he doesn't give us defense, but he gives us shooting, which is a huge need. And he only costs $7.7 million, and he's expiring. And the icing on the cake, we get 2 second-round picks, which is really good because, you know, okay, yeah, second-round picks are somewhat disposable. You can a lot of times buy those, but, okay, you save $4 million or whatever on buying 2 second-round picks. You just get it from this Calderon deal. So,
But also for a team that doesn't have their own first-rounder next year and might not have it in the next 3 years, they might only have it once.
Right.
So it's essential to get some draft picks coming back. So
exactly. So it's, you know, continuing to stockpile assets. I mean, we don't need that many more young guys, right? But you never know who's going to emerge in the workouts, who's going to slip to the second round, especially, I mean, I haven't seen this confirmed, but I read a rumor somewhere that one of the 2 second-round picks is Chicago doesn't have their own 2017, but they have Denver's 2017, which is probably going to be in the top 8 of the second round, right? Because Denver's not going to be that good this year. So, yeah, that's really solid. You can, in a stacked draft like 2017, you can get a pretty solid player. And if you end up deciding, hey, we don't need that, or if by some, you know, miracle we end up winning in the lottery or getting in the top 3 somehow, and we end up getting another top 3 pick and we feel like we don't need our second rounder, we can draft an international guy, draft another guy like Ader Majok, you know what I mean? You just have to have these assets because you never know when something like this is going to come along. Or, you know, sometimes teams just want things for optics, you know what I mean? There might be a trade down the line where it's like, okay, this is not a fair trade. We're trading Swaggy P for, you know, player X, and the other team is like, optically, this looks really bad. So give us 2 second rounders and we'll call it a deal. And it's like, okay, here, have these two. We got these for free, basically. So, you know, I think the trade was great. And I have really, I don't see any downside really, because we needed to spend the money.
Yeah, it fills a lot of check marks that you need in terms of, you know, he's going to play his role. He's a veteran dude, played with Pau in the Spanish national team. For D'Angelo, he's probably going to show D'Angelo, hey, stop making these weird risky passes and learn from me, make solid passes, solid reads. This is how I've always had a great assist to turnover ratio. And then on the other end, you know, the 40% shooting will just help in general, because out of our 3 big signings, he's the one guy who's a legit, probably, quote unquote, pure shooter, which is something the Lakers said they were trying to hone in on this offseason. But yeah, overall, I agree with you. It's like a low risk move and it's going to help us in the long run. I think that's all I have to say about Calderon. Whether or not it's the Denver second rounder, I don't know. I've also heard that maybe we're getting Cleveland's second round pick that they're giving the Bulls for taking on Mike Dunleavy. We might be getting Cleveland. So, I mean, it depends. But either way, we're getting 2 second rounders, whether that's this year or in a future year. But let's say that we do have Denver's second round pick. Next year in 2017, we also have our own second rounder, right?
We could possibly
package those up and move a little if we find someone that we really like too. So there's possibilities with these assets. And the fact that we're just getting assets is a good thing.
Definitely.
And then the other thing is if a contending team needs Calderon at the trade deadline or something, and we can get another second rounder. We do that too, you
know? Would very, very well could happen. You know what I mean? It's, the thing about Calderon is you like these guys, and it seems like Mitch was willing to pay a premium, as I'm sure you guys talked about with the Dang and Mozgov thing. Mitch was willing to pay a premium for guys who are just not going to complain and not be locker room divas. Calderon is 34. Like, he's on his last NBA legs. You can bring this guy in and literally play him in 15 games the entire season, and he's not going to cause issues in the locker room. He's going to come in and work hard every day with a smile on his face. And those are the kinds of guys you want. And the reality is, if he does that, this is still a good trade. If he only plays in 15 games, it's still a good trade because we got the assets and he's a good locker room presence. If he ends up playing, we don't know what Luke is going to do. Like, Golden State, although, like, when it comes to playoff time, they really constrict their lineup to maybe, like, 8 core guys. During the season, they're playing 12 guys, fairly significant minutes. So we don't know what Luke is going to do here. He...
Oops, you're cutting out.
8 minute per game. Valorant's like a 10-minute, 8-minute per game, you know, role player who his job is to come in and see if he can make 1 or 2 threes, and that's it, you know. So I don't know. I don't really see any downside. I really like the move.
No, not at all. And you'd figure the teams that are trying to trade for Calderon, those are the competitive teams that don't care about second round picks anyway.
Right,
so
right.
Yeah. All right. So let's end the Calderon hype there. I can't believe there's Calderon hype.
I know. Yeah.
But also after. Shortly after that, the Lakers also today we found out the Lakers re-signed Huertas to what is presumably going to be one of our exceptions. I forget which one it is, but it's probably going to be the exception where we'll re-sign him along with Tariq Black after we've finished using up our cap space, if we use it at all. So it doesn't really affect our cap right now, which we should have around, according to Pincus, around $14 million right now. With a swaggy wave, it would be around $17 million. So we can still use up all that money and then go over the cap to re-sign Tariq. And then Huertas. Huertas is, I'm guessing, like $2 million. I don't know. But... it's obvious that Huertas is also there to continue his Spanish clown, Brazilian clown ways, just in case Calderon gets hurt, which is a likely scenario,
right.
Or just for, you know, garbage time minutes to make it a little more fun at the end. So there's that. So I guess with all that said, I haven't asked you about the Dang and Mozgov signing, because last I talked to you, we were talking Whiteside and Parsons, which is crazy. But
the
I guess
poor man's version of Whiteside and Parsons.
Oh, we did get the poor man's version. Exactly. So with all that said, I guess, what is your grade for the Lakers thus far in free agency? And given the Huerta signing, we realistically only have one roster slot left. If Swaggy gets waived, then we have 2. But because Mitch typically likes to leave one roster slot open for the beginning of the season, we're pretty much down to one move and one move only. So with that said, what's your grade thus far for the Lakers?
So I'm going to count everything, including Clarkson and Tark Black and Huertas and all that Calderon. So everything, including everything, I would probably give us a B. I mean, the main thing, or maybe a B minus, probably a B minus. And obviously the main thing that's weighing that down, which I'm sure you guys touched on a lot, is Mozgov. And I actually am higher on Mozgov than I think most people are. I just think, and I don't even think we overpaid him. I think we just gave him way too many years. And way too many being one, but still one is like a lot, you know, when we're sitting in 2019 or whatever, and we're paying Mozgov $16 million, we're going to be really pissed probably. So everything else, I thought Jordan Clarkson was an A signing. I thought the Calderon trade, that was an A move. I thought the Tariq Black, you know, he doesn't really play, so we don't know, but given what they got him for in this market, like an upside center for $6.5 million or whatever he got per year, and the second year isn't even guaranteed, I thought that was a great move. And then Huertas, you know, he's your Calderon insurance basically, and if he's willing to sign a 2-year deal, there's your potential third string point guard next year in the event that Calderon most likely walks or retires or whatever. So all those.
And then what about Luol Deng?
Oh, and Luol Deng, I really like too. I mean, was he overpaid? Yes. Not grossly, in my opinion, because Evan Turner got like the same contract. And Evan Turner is, look, if it depends, everything is in context, right? If we were a team like Portland or something, Evan Turner is not an overpay for Portland because he fits in their age range. They don't need like veteran leaders to come stabilize that locker room. They've built a good system. They have their all-star caliber players. They needed Evan Turner to just come in and be Evan Turner. For us, we needed a guy who has a reputation around the NBA. Everybody knows Luol Deng. He's a good guy. People like him. He's 31 years old. He's been in the league for what, like 12 years or something? He has, right? Like,
really?
I think.
Okay, maybe.
I can't remember how many years he went, how old he was when he came out, but he's been in the NBA for like at least 10 or 11 years.
I mean, if it's not 12 years, he looks like he's been in the league for 12 years. Yeah,
he definitely does. But we needed somebody like that. So although it I don't think, again, that's another case where I don't think we overpaid per year. I think it should have been a 3-year with a 4th-year team option.
Sure.
But guess what? When you're a 17-win team and you're trying to convince this high character, you know, good locker room, good defensive player type, good veteran type guy to come to your team, you have to overpay a little bit.
Because yeah, I mean, sadly, he was the best wing available left in free agency, right?
He was, yeah. I mean, like, just objectively, like, not taking into account age or upside, or
yeah,
just in terms of who's going to be the best guy coming in year one, it was, like, after Parsons and Durant and all these guys, like, obviously we never had a chance at Durant, but once Parsons and guys like that started falling off the board, it was like, okay, well, Deng is, like, actually, like, objectively right now probably the best player.
Yeah.
And he, you know, I don't know. He fills a lot of needs. He could play the stretch four in some lineups for Luke. And so I even like that move. It was just really down. Oops, and probably shifts it down.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking to Alan about this, but the thing that I love most about the Deng move is, look, we're being realistic here. He's probably, in terms of actual on-court play, going to live up to his contract in years one and two and then drop off. But I think he's going to outlive his contract in terms of the impact he has organizationally as a recruiter, as yes, a man on the ground, as someone that other players around the league can trust, because it makes such a difference to have a man on the ground, as we saw this summer, where there are no guys... The free agents that we're going after, sure, they're all a lot older than any of the young core. So why would they listen to what they have to say? They want to hear what a guy like Luau Deng, who's well-respected, highly regarded, has to say about the organization, the culture, yada, yada.
Been on multiple teams.
Yeah, exactly. That right now, all we have is Luke, which is great. But on the other side is awkward gym bus and then Mitch, who's kind of looking a little wackadoo these days. You know, like, if I was a free agent, I'd be like, you know, I already live in LA anyways. I don't really know much about this organization. And I would need someone like Luau Deng sitting right across from me telling me, no, you got to believe them. What they're saying, what they're feeding you is true. You know, that makes such a huge difference. And it may pay dividends as soon as 2017, but more likely in free agency in 2018 and 2019. So that's why even I'm not too worried about the years on Deng's deal. I think it all goes back to the Mozgov deal, right? That's what brings the whole grade down, because I'm like you. I don't even think Mozgov is bad, because I watch his highlights and I see, like, the Hulk smashing posterizations he's able to do. I'm just like, I was like, what? How is he able to do this? How does he look so athletic and so powerful when he jams the stuff down? So he's a good player, you know, if he stays healthy. The problem is, it's a big if. And then the problem is, with the deals that you give out like this, you're hoping that the players you get can outlive or outplay their contracts. With the Mozgov deal, in terms of the money and the years, you're just hoping he somehow lives up to 90% of that contract, you know?
I mean, if he can get through 3 years, I'd be pretty surprised.
Sure, whereas if you look at deals like the Aldridge deal, Cole Aldridge deal for $7 million over three, there's a pretty good chance he's going to outplay that contract given the context of the rest of the league, right?
Yeah.
Even with the Bismack deal, even though he's making like $5-6 million more than Mozgov, there's a pretty good chance he's going to outlive that deal because he's only 23 years old right now, you know? Mozgov, it's like with his injuries, with his age already being 29, 30, you're just like, please, Mozgov, give us 2 years of 100% living up to this deal.
Yeah.
So in the end, it's not a terrible, terrible deal, but it's not the most optimal deal in the end. So I think that's the biggest thing. And obviously, again, we see with Kevin Durant going to the Golden State, Bogut could be had for pretty much nothing at this point. I think they gave the Mavericks a second round pick to take Bogut on, you know? So people are saying Mozgov's Bogut. Well, if we had waited, we technically could have gotten Bogut.
An expiring Bogut, yeah.
Yeah, obviously hindsight's 20/20, but I was just, even before all this stuff happened, I said if you just wait, you'll probably see some bargain options open up. And that's exactly what happened. And then obviously the biggest hindsight is, not that we want this guy, but Festus Ezeli just signed with the Blazers for 2 years, $7 million per year, which is what? I mean, he sucks. That guy sucks. But I mean, for that price, it's like he's probably going to outplay that deal easily, especially because Portland has a team option on the second year.
Right.
So, I mean, all in all, the Mozgov thing, look, if he had a team option in the fourth year, it may look better, but that's pretty much what's bringing it down, the years and the money. So,
yeah, I think with things, and just to clarify, I think with things, or my perspective at least, with things like the Ezeli trade, or sorry, the Ezeli signing, I try not to read too deeply into that because, again, we're a 17-win team. Who Azealy, to me, as at $7 million, just to have him on the bench as like a backup center option makes so much sense. So you ask yourself, oh, well, why don't the Lakers just do that? I mean, he got a second year team option, for God's sake. So that even fits in our, you know, expiring option plan. But like with a guy like Azealy, he's not going to want, the whole idea here is there, he's probably assuming that after the, he's young-ish, right? So he's assuming that this is not his last contract. He's assuming he's going to get maybe one more big payday. So if you're a guy like Azealy, you want to go to a situation where, like, they can guarantee you minutes. They can guarantee you, you know, Portland is going to be, like, a top-four team in the West next year, probably, now that OKC has fallen off, right? I mean, they were already, like, fifth. Or wait, they were, like, fifth this year, right? Or sixth?
Fifth or sixth, something like that.
They were, like, fifth or sixth this year. OKC has fallen off. They signed Evan Turner. They're getting Azealy now. And now that they got him for so cheap, they can keep, like, all of their restricted free agents. So Portland is going to be up there next year. And you want to be – and is in they play similar to how Azealy's old team played. And you just – if you're Azealy, you want to be on a team that's going to get, like, national hype, that's going to be in the playoffs, that's going to be, you know, contending for stuff, because – that's how you're going to get your next big contract. If to sign with a 17-win team, you're putting yourself at such a risk. And we've seen it happen to guys. Like, could you imagine if Brandon Bass was, like, on the Celtics last year? What kind of money would he have gotten this summer? Like, I know he's a little older, but, like, he's a really solid player. But the thing is, he was putting up numbers on a team. First of all, nobody was watching him. And second of all, he was putting up numbers on a team that won 17 games. So everyone is taking those numbers with, like, a huge grain of salt.
Well, here's a better example for you. Like Jeremy Lin, when he played with the Lakers, he still averaged 11 points for assists, but because he did it on a 17-27 win team, he only got $2 million.
Exactly.
He moves to Charlotte and shows everybody that he can do the same thing in the playoffs.
He didn't even play as well with them. I mean, like, his defense was
technically
much better,
yeah.
And his stats were overall about the same, but he actually, I think, shot better with us. And he got paid. And you're right. That's a way better example. So that's what I'm saying. These guys are holding out for stuff like that. So with the Azealy thing, I'm not going to really, you know, get too mad about that. But the thing that really annoyed me was when I saw the Biombo thing, because look, Biombo thing is 4 years. It was first reported as 4 years, 72. It's actually 4 years, 68 million, because apparently, because apparently 4 million of that is incentives that he's like extremely unlikely to hit.
Wow.
So I couldn't remember. I read somebody posted about it, but it was like he has to make the All-Star team or like ridiculous
or
stuff
make
like
finals
that.
MVP or something.
Stuff like it's stuff that he's not going to get. Like basically, so his cap. So the way it works, right? And this is kind of arbitrary, I think, but I think Pincus explained it. But the way it works when you have incentives is they actually count your cap hit as whether it's likely or not that you're going to hit that incentive. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they determined that it's not likely he's going to hit that incentive. And so his cap hit is only 4 years, 68 million, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And look, I know they were, again, this goes back to, I'm not in the front office. I'm not in Luke's mind or Brian Shaw, who coached Mozgov in Denver, or, you know, Jim or Mitch's mind or whatever. And apparently they were super high on Mozgov, but for God's sake, Biombo went for like nearly the same price. To me, it's hard to justify that. I get that you want to pay a premium for a veteran, but for God's sake, sign Biombo and sign like a veteran backup at that point.
Honestly, my only devil's advocate to the Mozgov signing was that, one, he plays better offensively and maybe fits Luke's system better.
Yeah.
And then, two, was the veteran thing. You know, maybe they didn't want another 23-year-old guy who nobody – I mean, not that anybody's going to respect Mozgov more, but the fact that he's played on playoffs, finals, teams kind of helps them in that veteran sort of sense. So, but other than that, and it's they're faulty devil's advocate plays, but it's clear that they had Mozgov number one on their big board, right?
Which
I don't
crazy.
Really see –
I mean, I don't know how. Yeah. I mean, look, they're trying to do this move towards more analytics, right? And 2 years, obviously you have to put a huge caveat on all this stuff because it was 2 years ago and we don't know if he's the same player, but 2 years ago, Mozgov was in the 90th percentile as a finisher in the pick and roll. That's really good. You know, we need that. That's going to be a huge part of It's going to greatly help D'Angelo's development because he's a pick and roll player. It's going to greatly help our offense because if he's a 90% finisher, he's going to be able to finish in traffic. He's going to be able to, it also tells you he's really good at setting screens. You know, all that stuff is great. He helped Cleveland a lot with defensive efficiency once he got there from Denver. Again, all this stuff was 2 years ago, though. So it's like, okay, great. If he returns to that level, this signing was completely worth it. If he doesn't, yeah. In the very likely event that he doesn't return to that level, it's so hard to justify.
Well, like I said earlier, the Lakers with this deal and the amount of years and no team options, they left themselves with no room for error with Mozgov.
Oh, no room.
With Bismack, you have room for error because even at the tail end of his deal, he's only going to be 26.
Exactly.
So you can just trade him,
just
you know.
Trade him.
But with Mozgov, you're hoping everything clicks right. Number one, that he's healthy 100% of the time. You know, number two, that he doesn't become a defensive sieve in years 3 and 4. Number three, that you can trade him at any one point that you need to, and that his value doesn't get shot, you know, like all of this stuff. So, I mean, that's the only thing that I keep harping back to, that the Lakers left themselves with no room for error with this Mozgov deal. So,
right.
I mean, it is what it is, but in the context of everything, I guess the Lakers rebounded, and we can end this free agency segment up here because we still have to get to what now part three. But I was talking to you about this earlier, but I feel like Mitch always has this prerogative going into free agency whenever he strikes out. He always has a certain template that he goes for. And I think this is very indicative of who the Lakers are as a franchise.
Right.
I know that statement's been thrown out that the Lakers are operating like a small market team. In actuality, the Lakers are always operating like the Lakers, for better or for worse, if you know what I'm saying, because the Lakers still have to sell tickets. The Lakers, like I told you, the Lakers can't operate like they're the Sixers or like they're a hinky Moneyball team that can just sign Harkless, Crab, all of these young upside guys that nobody knows. They're the Lakers, and for casual fans that sit courtside and have no idea that they even have rookies, Mitch needs to sign guys that people know. And over the years, that's exactly what he's done. Even in the last 3 years when he's had cap space, when he struck out, he's gone straight for the guys that people may know.
Right.
So obviously this year it's Mozgov, who's been in the finals the last 2 years, played with LeBron James. People would know him vaguely. Luau Deng, people would know even more. Former All-Star, played with Derrick Rose. Jose Calderon, people know because he used to put up 12-8 and he played in the Spanish national team with Pau.
Yep.
So this year's Mozgov, Deng, and Calderon is just a souped up version of last year's Roy Hibbert, who people know playing with the Pacers, being in the Eastern Conference Finals, Brandon Bass, who people know from the Celtics, and Lou Williams, who a year ago was Sixth Man of the Year. And 2 years ago, that was a souped up version of Carlos Boozer, Jordan Hill, Jeremy Lin. And then what preceded the Jeremy Lin stuff, when we only had like $10 million to use or $5 million, in cap space, was we signed Chris Kamen and Swaggy P.
Yeah.
So it's Mitch has this weird trend of whenever he strikes out in free agency, it always seems like he asks himself, what former well-known player that the public knows who may have also been a former All-Star, but is clearly not what he once was, can I throw money at this offseason?
Very complicated question he has.
I know. So they always seem to do this kind of like weird veteran optics name game kind of thing, but I understand it because they are the Lakers and they do need to sell tickets. Would we prefer them to go out and sign Bismack, Azili, Crab, and Harkless and all these no-name guys that are fit the analytics model well and that nobody knows? Yes, we would love that if they also like preserve their cap space and were a little more judicious in the years that they hand out. But the reality is, they also need to get butts in the seats and sell some tickets to the casual fans.
Yeah.
And then that way they can learn more about the rookies. So, I mean, any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, I think I'd like to think that this year was a little bit different. I mean, I'm not going to try to like delude myself too much. But I'd like to think this year was a little bit different in the sense that we clearly have our young core of like 5-6 guys that we want to move forward with now. And those guys need a veteran leader. And they've really been stressing this culture thing, I think, way more so this year than they have in years past. When Luke was signed, the first thing that came out of his mouth, basically, in like the immediate interviews that came out was culture. You know, he's constantly talking about culture. He's talking about how the Warriors built the culture, and you know, and it seems like that's something that clicked with the ownership and management a lot when he came into his meeting, because it seems like they were sort of thinking about that too. And So I'd like to think that this summer was a little bit more of that, but I still agree that, like, you know, it's the Lakers. They need to sell their tickets. They have to keep Time Warner Cable happy with that giant deal they have. You know, most teams don't have their own network, right? So they need to keep Time Warner Cable happy. They need to get fans in the stadium. They need to start to grow interest so that once the team gets good again, it's like, you know, everyone hasn't, like, completely jumped ship to the Warriors or, like, the Clippers, or not to say LA fans are bandwagon, but for the casual fans, like you're mentioning, they're losing out on, like, a lot of potential earnings if, like, nobody is watching the team because they're winning 15 games every year. Like, how's anyone going to know anything about Brandon Ingram or D'Angelo Russell or Jordan Clarkson? Like, these guys are not going to be well known if your team is winning 15 games every year.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, we'll end that segment right there on the Lakers free agency moves thus far. And with one move left, essentially, one or two moves left, the Lakers are essentially done with free agency this year, which is crazy to think about. But we've definitely got a reality check. But we're slowly on the rebuild and rebound once again. Like you said, thank God we have the young core. Yeah. But we're entering now into what now part three. How do the Lakers close this segment out? Like I mentioned earlier, the Lakers have about $12 to $14 million left to play with. And if they waive Swaggy, that goes up to like around $17 million. But they only have two more roster slots open if they waive Swaggy. And like I said, realistically, that boils down to one. So with the moratorium ending, and now we might be seeing some restricted free agency offers thrown at guys like Crabb, Harkless, Myers Leonard, Jared Sullinger, Tyler Zeller. What do you think the Lakers will do now? Because they've kind of done one equation of trading, using their cap space to take on guys and getting extra assets in the Calderon deal, which they could still end up doing towards the end here. Or they could take one more upside play with that $14 million and try and find a guy who will take an inflated one-year deal. Or they can try and split that up into two guys or something, which I doubt they do because they only have one slot left.
Right.
Or like you've mentioned, maybe they just don't use that money at all. So let me throw out some names to you, and you tell me if any guys interest you and if you would go down any particular route. So in the shooting guard category, obviously Allen Crabbe is a restricted free agent. In your sense, do you think the Lakers even throw out a restricted free agency offer at this point?
I don't think they do, because I think the expectation is Portland's going to match. And we would have to give him too many years, and it seems like we're trying to preserve one max for 2017.
Yeah, right now it's still doable to preserve, and we learned today that the cap jump is not going to be 108 but 102 now, so we're going from 94 million this year to 102 next year, which would make Russell Westbrook's max, or a player in Russell Westbrook's category, around 29 million right
for the first year. Yeah,
so obviously next year, Tarik Black's salary is going to be unguaranteed. Calderon's salary of 7.7 is going to come off. Swaggy's supposedly going to get stretched. And then we could probably trade Lou Williams $7 million away for nothing.
Yeah. I mean, we probably won't even have to do all that. I think we pretty much have enough right now. I think we have enough right now.
Punt
the rest.
If we punt it for 1 year deal. So if we go down the punt 1 year deal route, here are some names outside of Crabbe to look at. Shooting guards, we got J.R. Smith, we got Lance Stevenson, Alan Anderson, Troy Daniels, P.J. Hairston, Wayne Ellington, Dion Waiters.
Dion Waiters is still out there, huh?
Yeah, he's a defensive god, apparently, from the playoffs. Mitch's favorite, Gerald Green, and older vet, Kevin Martin. So does anyone pique your interest in that shooting guard category?
No. I think what's going to happen is, I mean, like, to be fully honest with you, I don't think they're going to sign any remaining free agents.
Sure.
I think what they're going to do, I mean, look, ultimately they might, but they are currently already, they've met the floor with the Calderon trade. I think most people know, but for people who don't know, the floor is you have to hit, 95% of the cap. So if the cap is 94 million, or maybe it's 90%. If the cap is 94 million, you have to hit like 90% of that. We're already at the floor, I believe. The reason the numbers don't align up perfectly is because we haven't signed Ingram, we haven't signed Huertas, we haven't signed. Theoretically, if we had signed all of those guys that we're supposed to sign today, we would be at the floor.
Yeah.
And so we don't technically have to do anything. I mean, there's no penalty for not hitting the floor, but all that means is whatever the difference is between where you are and the floor, you have to give that money to the players you have. But that doesn't matter because we're already there, so we're fine in that sense. And so what I think they're going to do is there was so much activity and teams that are not using to be not used to being players on in the free agency market suddenly became players on the free agency market. So, you know, all these teams randomly got cap space and they ended up signing guys that they had their eye on. And it's created a lot of positional redundancies on several teams in the NBA. Then you also get into situations where teams that did not expect to be good are suddenly pretty good. Like, you know, Memphis ended up keeping Conley, who a lot of people thought might bolt for the Knicks before free agency started. They ended up keeping him and signing Chandler Parsons. And obviously they still have Marc Gasol and they got a new coach. Like, so point being, teams that like thought they maybe they wouldn't be so good, or we thought they wouldn't be so good, are suddenly like pretty good. And like the Bulls are like going to maybe try to contend now that they have Wade. And we don't know what's going to happen. And I think a lot of trades are going to occur in the next few weeks. And I think the Lakers are going to sit back with their cap space and say, okay, well, guess what? We have the flexibility of not having to give anyone back. We can absorb contracts. And if there's a team that's trying to dump a contract because of a positional redundancy, we can accept it. If they're trying to, you know, trade for Lou, but like the guy they want to give us costs more than what Lou costs, okay, we can absorb the excess into our salary cap space and we don't have to send anyone back. So it's, I think that they're going to wait around for those opportunities. Maybe see how the summer league plays out. If somebody shocks them in the summer league, although I doubt that's going to happen. But I think they're going to sit around and wait and see if anything emerges with that. And if not, I don't even know if they're going to do like a 1 year punt contract. They might just give somebody like a small contract for a year and just see what happens. And then if they end up deciding that they're going to use the money, they could just use it at the trade deadline, because the same thing is that's happening now is going to happen at the trade deadline. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there are going to be teams that want to, you know, pick up guys who are waived, or want to, you know, a team that thought they were going to contend and it turns out that, you know, it didn't go as well as they thought it was going to go. And now they're trying to shed money so they don't have to pay $30 million in luxury tax or something. Those situations are going to arise. And so it also doesn't hurt to keep that space open for the season. So
sure.
I mean, well, I think, yeah, go ahead.
I think either way, the Lakers are going to play the waiting game, right? Yeah. Waiting game to see if new other trade. I mean, it's funny that they're playing the waiting game after signing Mozgov 12:01 AM.
I know.
But I mean, either way, they're going to wait to see if any other trades open up. And I think they're also going to wait to see what players are left looking for teams to snag onto. And in that sense, I think that's when you could give them like $4 million 1 year contract or something. But I do still think, even if you may think it's a lower percentage, that they might also use that money for a 1 year punt upside play, whether that's a $9 million 1 year deal or a $4 million 1 year deal or something. So with that said, let's play that devil's advocate game, and I'll throw out some names at you because I think they'll still at least fill out one more roster slot.
Okay.
So like I said, the shooting guards, nobody interested you in terms of J.R. Smith, Lance Stevenson, Alan Anderson, Choi Daniels, PJ Hairston, Gerald Green, Kevin Martin. For me, I would be fine with them signing Troy Daniels to like a $3 million, $5 million contract, because he fills that pure shooting role that they said they've wanted.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a very good defender, but I mean, he could fill that shooting that we need. Lance Stevenson's interesting, but I don't think they're going to go with him because he's too much of a risk. But once again, Brian Shaw was his coach in Indiana when he blew up, so you never know with that he would be one of those 1 year upside punt plays for like $9 million. But I don't think they want to delude the locker room in that sense. So moving on to the small forwards, we've got even worse options. We got Chase Buttinger, James Johnson, who's a defensive type dude, PJ Hairston, Jordan Hamilton, Alonzo G, and Quincy Acey. Do any of those guys pique your interest at all?
Honestly, not really. I mean,
yeah,
even The only position where I can see them doing a 1 year overpay is if they can find like a power forward center type guy. Like, I think one guy you were tweeting about today was Willie Reed. I don't know if he would take a 1 year deal, but if that guy would take a 1 year deal, I would probably just throw the money at him.
I feel like you could even do like a multi-year deal for him too with options, just because he doesn't really have any leverage. So maybe you could give him like $4 million, and that really wouldn't, you know, make a difference in our preserving max cap space for next year either.
And right. But with a guy like Reed though, again, you get back in that like Azealia type argument. Like, this guy's getting decent hype from teams like Golden State and San Antonio. I think San Antonio signed somebody, but Golden State was interested in this guy. And does it make sense for him to take $6 million for 1 year to play for the Lakers? Or does it make sense for him to take like the minimum and just play for Golden State and dramatically increase his value, you know? So I don't know.
I guess it depends on how they pitch it to him, because in Golden State, he might not get any minutes at all. And that might be the same here. But, you know, maybe Mitch and Luke are like, hey, we've got a starting center who could only play 25 minutes if he's healthy, and he might not be healthy. So your only competition for minutes then, if that in that scenario, would be Tariq Black, who we're trying to mine for upside as well, but we haven't committed anything to him as well. And Zubac, we're not even sure if he's going to be D-League relegated, you know? So in that sense, I think he might find that attractive to have a shot at 15 to 20 minutes, you know? And to give a little context, Willie Reed is this 6'10 forward center. He's 26. He looks like Greg Monroe, but he's like the defensive version of Greg Monroe. He played with Brooklyn last year for a few games, but it really seems like he has a great defensive potential. He's like rock hard, solid body. God. He looks like a strong dude.
Do you know from personal experience?
Yeah, no, I was just watching tape, man. But in terms of stats, this guy's had the highest net rating. I mean, this isn't saying much with Brooklyn, but he had the highest net rating of all Brooklyn players last year, +8, highest true shooting percentage, highest block percentage, and highest win shares percentage. In 11 minutes and 39 games, he averaged 4.7 points, 3.1 rebounds, one block on 57% field goals. And per 100 possessions, that translates to 21.5 points, 14.4 rebounds, and 3.5 blocks. I know you do. But like, in terms of 11 minutes, to put up those numbers and affect the game in that way is solid. So, obviously
he's solid, I think.
Yeah. So I would definitely jump at the chance to give him a flyer. It all depends on the context and what he wants, what we want, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So Willie Reed, that's a name to keep out, keep in mind, but I don't think it's probably going to happen. So other names we talked about, let's say we do the 1 year upside play in the power forward position. We've talked about this guy before. We've got Terrence Jones, Derek Williams. He would be your number one guy, right, in terms of banking on upside.
Really like Terrence Jones. I remember, it's kind of funny. I mean, in hindsight, nobody should have ever done this, but there were talks about people when we had that pick for Randall, number 7, a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I remember there were people who were seriously like, look, we need to trade number 7 for Terrence Jones because there's no one who we can get at 7 who's going to be better. And for a while, it's like every team, when Houston was trying to make a trade, they wanted Terrence Jones coming back. Like, he was a very hot commodity, and he just like fell off the face of the earth. I don't know what happened. I know he was banged up, and he's been sort of banged up for his whole career. Except for that,
I think a lot of it had to also do with him getting like ravaged by LaMarcus Aldridge in the playoffs, and then his confidence going down. So
it could have been that. Yeah. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge completely destroyed him, right? But like, look, LaMarcus Aldridge has destroyed a lot of very capable players. But I don't know. So that's, I don't know what happened to him. I think that's a really good example, though, of like, you might be able to 1 year overpay him as like a reclamation project. Like, Mitch had a reputation for doing this. For a while with guys like, I mean, sometimes they didn't pan out, but sometimes they did. But guys like Ariza was like kind of the start of it. And then we picked up guys like Wes Johnson and Nick Young and, you know, these random guys on 1 year deals who showed signs and ended up coming in and doing like Jordan Hill before we realized he sucked. these are all examples of like things that times Mitch has done that. And the one thing I like about Terrence Jones is he can play some center. Because although he's only 6'9", he's very, very strong. and he's got a good wingspan. I think it's like a 7'2" wingspan, and he has good shot blocking instincts. And when he was healthy, his pick and roll defense was like in the 90th percentile or something. So, you know, really high percentile rank in pick and roll defense. So I really like Terrence Jones. I don't
know. And it's just, it's just another asset. You know, he's at least shown flashes and upside before. Like a year ago, he averaged in 26 minutes, 12 points, 7 rebounds, 1.8 blocks on 52% shooting.
Yeah.
And the other thing with Terrence Jones is he shoots threes a little bit. He's a 30% three-point shooter. So I guess, he would be an option for that upside punt play. I'm guessing we'd have to offer him like 1 year, $9 million, wouldn't you say? Something like that.
Yeah, or maybe, I mean, it depends on what other offers he's getting because the market is weirdly quiet for him. But I think that would be probably a low end if you're talking about a 1 year deal.
Yeah, and then the only other guy I'd consider in that range would be Derek Williams, who I can't believe I've wrapped my head around, but I have.
I know, I hated this Derek guy Williams is... for so long, but now I'm like, I take him.
Yeah, but I did like the research, and you know that was one of the first rumors we heard coming out of free agency, which kind of boggled my mind. At this point, knowing that the well has run dry, it's like, why not at this point? Because Derek Williams, he's only 25 somehow.
Yeah.
And last year, he had a legitimately pretty good season with the New York Knicks in limited minutes. And judging from his tape, he is still one of the most athletic players I've ever seen. Yeah, and in a Luke Walton... athletic. In a Luke Walton up and down system, you can never have a lack for up and down guys who can just you can just pass it to and they'll jam it down guys' throats. You know, we have Nance right now, but we don't have as explosive athletic guys like him. And you know Derek Williams is not gonna dribble the ball and do anything and one like or whatever. He's just gonna run the floor, be the role guy in pick and rolls, and catch alley oops. And for a guy like D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram, I think that could be a good help for them. And because he's 25, who knows what happens? If you give him a 1 year, $9 million deal with a team option for the second year or no second year at all, it could end up panning out and Luke could end up using him correctly. You know,
yeah.
I know we're putting a lot on Luke to use everybody correctly, right. But it just could happen. So we'll see. I guess one last thing is, would you be open to Brandon Bass coming back if that was the option? Because they might be looking for another one last veteran as if we didn't have enough. But would you be open to Brandon Bass coming back? Because there was that slight rumor that the Lakers are interested in Drew Gooden, but it could have just been his agent putting it out there. So,
yeah, I mean, between Gooden and Bass, I would much rather have Bass.
Yeah, for sure.
I think Bass, the risk with him is he's getting a little bit old enough now to the point where if he is going to sign with the Lakers, he's going to want a multi-year deal because he's not going to sign here for like 1 year, $9 million and then like never play and then become a free agent again next year. And then still nobody wants him. You know what I mean? And we just like kick him to the curb or something. Cause we only had him for 1 year. So I don't really see that happening. I mean, look, the guy has to like feed his family or something at some point. So nobody signs him. I think obviously he'll take a deal like that with us. And I would not be opposed to it because I think he fits in this mold of like he's a high character guy, hard, very, very hard worker, good role model for some of our young guys. And you just need guys like that around. I mean, we've acquired a good amount of veterans now, but, you know, getting another one, Brandon Bass is not like ancient like Calderon and stuff. So it would be nice to get another guy like, what is he, like 31 or something, 32 maybe?
Yeah, he's not that old.
So to get somebody like in that age range who could like hang out with Luol Deng and like Mozgov and Lou Williams and stuff like that, because those are pretty much our only veterans.
Yeah, so I wouldn't be opposed to Brandon Bass coming back at all. It's just sad knowing that our free agency is probably over at this point. But
yeah,
it is what it is. Like you said, there could be trades coming up in the next week. I know Alex Kennedy said he anticipates a GM was talking to him and said that he probably anticipated several trades could happen. We'll see after the dust kind of settles and all this craziness settles. So yeah, I mean, we'll see. And that's kind of it for the free agency. But luckily, hey, we got Summer League Ball coming up tomorrow, dude. Are you excited?
I'm so excited. I've set my DVR already. I'm ready to watch.
We actually get to see freaking Brandon Ingram play and D'Angelo and his scruffy Coolio looking hair.
I'm like really interested to see what these guys have done because it weirdly has not been that much time. I mean, I know it's like it seemed like our season ended in December. But our real season ended in like April, and then there was all this fallout, and like I mean, I hope they were, like, because Kobe retired, but I hope they were, like, working really hard this whole time.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they have been.
It seems like they have been, and Mitch has been talking about it, but, like, the only guys we're going to see who we expect to be part of our rotation somewhat are going to be D'Angelo, Nance, Anthony Brown, and Ingram. So those four guys.
Zubac.
Oh, and Zubac. So those five.
Duck all the balls.
Yeah, yeah. So those five guys I'm going to be looking really closely at. Obviously, two of them are rookies, so I'm not expecting a ton. But between D'Angelo and Nance and Anthony Brown, especially D'Angelo, though, right? Because, I don't know, dude, I'm really high on D'Angelo, but the more time that passes without him showing that he has, like, significantly improved his game, I'm going to get, like, more and more nervous because this guy has potential to be really great. But I'm afraid that he's never going to get it, you know? Like, he doesn't have to be supremely athletic. But the thing is about with guys who are supremely athletic is that carries them until they get it. And with D'Angelo, I'm just concerned that he's never going to get the confidence that he needs to actually understand how to play basketball in the NBA because he's relatively unathletic. And does that make sense? I guess I'm just worried about that.
Who brainwashed you from April till now?
Yeah, I'm still super high on him. I still think
you've been talking to Ed Isaacson or what's going on?
Dude, I follow Ed Isaacson on Twitter and that guy is very negative about D'Angelo, but
no, I mean, I get the concern, yeah. Right? Because look, I mean, it's a big, I think, summer league for D'Angelo because sophomores usually ball out in summer league. And if he doesn't ball out, I'm going to be slightly concerned, especially because he's balling out with 1 year under his wings and in a new system with a wing player like Brandon Ingram next to him who can actually shoot. So if he, I get the concern in terms of, well, he better play decently or at least well, or else it's going to look bad, you know? But I mean, given if I remind myself the team he's on now and the context he's in, it's a much better situation than he was in last year. Then I'm like calmed again, right? I'm in a better place.
Yeah.
But I think it's just the Coolio hair. I don't know. Maybe you need to ask yourself that. No, but yeah, I'm very excited to see Brandon Ingram play. All we've heard coming out of the two practices that they've had is that he's the real deal. Nance has to call his dad and tell him that for some reason. But he's
Nance
the real
was
deal.
So shocked that he had to call his father and tell
him. Hey, Dad, this is Brandon Ingram kid. I'm buy stock in him, you know. But Larry Nance looked impressive in those videos, bringing the ball up the court. He looks more confident and fluid.
Yeah, he's really good.
So it's going to be fun tomorrow. I look forward to watching them play. I don't even know who they're playing tomorrow. I just know it's at 7:30 p.m.
I forgot also. They're playing Philly on Saturday.
Yeah, the Ben Simmons matchup is on Saturday. So I think we're all going to be hyped and we're going to be lit for that.
Yes.
Alan and I will probably do a post-game thing either tomorrow or Saturday to recap both. So it should be interesting to see the Lakers in the flesh. I think Jesse Mermoise. Yeah, I think he's coaching tomorrow. And hopefully it's not a Madsen situation where they don't actually have a game plan. And he's just saying, oh, just run out one or two sets or plays. And hopefully Luke has already given him actual full-fledged sets that they want to implement, and we actually see that.
What was Mermoise's title with the Warriors again? Was he like a video scout, or what was he?
I don't know, but I know he coached like the D-League team or something.
Oh, that's
like that.
Right, that's right.
So yeah, we'll see. That's going to be exciting tomorrow. I think we'll wrap it up there. Once again, you can follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Also, please rate and review us on iTunes. The more you rate and review us, like I said, that's how many rights to Thor Porzinga Boom we're going to be trading for for actual assets. Do we have any more Chikuta Berry Mata Boom Booms?
I feel like we drafted like 100 in between 2002 and 2012 or something. So we have plenty of more to trade away, I'm sure.
Well, we just got 2 second rounders that we can Porzinga Boom on. So there you go. All right. With that said, that's our show. Tommy, I'll catch you later.
Bye.
When I'm struggling, battling, pushing and pulling, and wishing that Messiah would be coming soon with his deliverance. I am. Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.